It looked like the candidate might get lost in the case, since the diagnostic clinical signs of meningitis were absent. He didn't think he had much to go on with the history and physical exam, but he adhered to the fourth strategy, which was to maintain a good working differential diagnosis. He kept thinking that meningitis was still a possibility. There were four critical actions in this case. 1. Performs lumbar puncture. 2. Diagnoses H-flu meningitis. 3. Administers ceftriaxone plus vancomycin IV. And 4. Admits patient. Other appropriate actions included the following. 1. Obtains appropriate lab work and cultures. 2. Administers an IV fluid bolus. And 3. Administers IV dexamethasone. The clinical presentations of meningitis in infants and newborns pose a special challenge to the emergency physician. They may be vague and can appear innocuous to the non-pediatrician. The case presentation here is a real one that I read about in the malpractice literature. However, the diagnosis was missed and the emergency physician sued. This is just the kind of case the board might use at the exam. The first thing I want to review with you is the importance of fever in the very young child. In the first 3 months of life, a temperature of 100.4 or greater is considered significant. Thereafter, a significant temperature is considered to be 102.2 or greater. The incidence of bacteremia in these children is high, and it goes higher with each degree of elevation. Up to 10% of children with bacteremia go on to develop meningitis if not appropriately treated with parenteral antibiotics. The organism most often responsible for producing occult bacteremia is Streptococcus pneumoniae. It is the etiologic agent in up to 85% of cases. Haemophilus influenza, Neisseria meningitidis, Salmonella species, and other pathogens are responsible for the remaining cases. Although the incidence of H-flu meningitis has dropped dramatically in all ethnic populations except the Native American Indians, in whom the HIV vaccine is less efficacious. The overall incidence of bacterial meningitis is highest in infants between 3 and 8 months of age. Fever greater than 102 is the usual finding in this age group. Neonates, however, frequently do not have a fever and may even be hypothermic. In the presence of fever over 100.4 or hypothermia below 98, meningitis must be ruled out in these children by lumbar puncture. And all infants up to 3 months of age with a temperature of 100.4 or more who appear toxic should have a septic workup, receive parenteral antibiotics, and be admitted to the hospital. In this age group, a good rule is to be aggressive in the presence of fever. Both sepsis and meningitis should be included in your differential diagnosis. When evaluating the very young who are febrile, a good rule to remember is this: the higher the fever and the younger the child, the greater the risk of serious infection. An infant less than 3 months of age with a fever greater than 100.3 is at high risk of having a serious infection. By the way, did you notice that the candidate waited to order Tylenol until he was halfway through the case? A minor point, perhaps, but I think this child should have been given a dose as soon as the temp of 102.8 was reported. Unless, of course, she had recently been given Tylenol by her mother, in which case a dose of ibuprofen would have been appropriate. Physical findings in the very young child with meningitis are often sparse, so a good history can be very valuable. Pertinent questions to ask the mother are these: is he feeding as well as he usually does? Is there any vomiting? Does he seem more irritable than usual? Is crying and irritability worsened when you pick him up? Does his cry sound normal to you? Has there been a recent change in his sleeping and waking pattern? Is he as active as he usually is? Increased irritability when held is a useful symptom. The cuddling, which normally would reduce crying, may cause movement of the inflamed meninges and therefore more crying. physical findings of nuchal rigidity, Koenig's, and Brudzinski signs should be sought, but they are frequently absent in this age group. A bulging fontanelle is an important sign, but it doesn't appear until late, making an early diagnosis that much more difficult. Otitis media or pharyngitis is frequently present in an infant with meningitis, so these are important clues. However, even if a source of infection cannot be found, a septic workup, including an LP, should be done in a child who has a high fever for his age and is also irritable, lethargic, or has meningeal signs. Minimum baseline studies in the very young febrile child include a CBC, blood culture, catheterized UA and urine culture, and a chest X-ray. Other appropriate lab studies include electrolytes, glucose, fecal WBCs, and cultures in children with diarrhea. Other cultures should be ordered as indicated. Children with a white count greater than 15,000 are considered to be at high risk for a serious bacterial infection and require closer follow-up, usually within 24 hours. Other indicators of higher risk include the presence of the following. 1. More than 1,500 bands on the differential. 2. 5 or more WBCs per high-powered field on the UA. And 3. 5 or more WBCs per high-powered field in the stool when diarrhea is present. A SED rate greater than 30 lends support to the diagnosis of a systemic bacterial infection, but is a nonspecific finding, and the absence of this finding cannot be used to exclude a serious infection. The child in this case had a high fever for his age, a white count of 16,800, and a SED rate of 35, all signs of a serious infection. While not all children with meningitis will have these signs, an oral board patient is very likely to have them. Countercurrent immunoelectrophoresis is a valuable diagnostic tool in a child with suspected meningitis or sepsis. It is specific for four organisms: H. flu, strep pneumoniae, Neisseria meningitidis, and group B strep. For best results, blood, urine, and CSF samples should all be submitted for this study. Countercurrent immunoelectrophoresis can help identify the causative agent and should be done in addition to Gram staining. It is most useful in patients with partially treated infections, as it can be detected for several days after the cultures become sterile. The pivotal point in the assessment of a young child with possible meningitis is the lumbar puncture. It should be done as soon as the diagnosis is suspected. Waiting for lab results is not necessary if you are already clinically suspicious. In that case, it wouldn't matter what the results were. You would still have to do an LP based on your clinical assessment. The reason this point is important is because the sooner the diagnosis is made and the sooner it's treated, the lower the morbidity and mortality rate. Ideally, this candidate should have performed the LP before the lab results were back, but he wasn't sure of himself, so he waited. Had he been a little more astute, he would have realized that a temp of 102 in an irritable 3-month-old child was suspicious enough. A presumptive diagnosis of meningitis can be made if cloudy fluid is returned through the LP needle. IV antibiotics should be given immediately in the presence of this finding, even before the spinal fluid results are back. This candidate waited for the results before initiating antibiotic therapy, but this was not necessary since he noted that the fluid was cloudy before he sent it to the lab. If the fluid obtained through the LP needle is clear, it may be prudent to wait for the lab results of the spinal fluid before proceeding further. However, the current literature does not support this position if your clinical suspicion is high. A single dose of antibiotic is not going to harm a very ill-appearing child and may save his life, not to mention prevent serious complications. There are three criteria in the interpretation of the spinal fluid results that establish the diagnosis of bacterial meningitis. 1. A white count greater than 500 with a predominance of neutrophils. 2. A glucose level that is less than one-half the serum glucose. And 3. A Gram stain that demonstrates bacteria. Clear fluid with non-diagnostic results or a completely clear tap warrant a repeat LP within 6 to 8 hours, and the child should be admitted for close observation. It is not unusual for symptoms to begin prior to the demonstration of bacteria in the cerebrospinal fluid. At the exam, you are likely to be given a clear-cut case, but if you are handling the situation exceptionally well, the examiner may decide to see how good you really are and present you with fluid results that may not be easy to interpret. If you follow the guidelines I just reviewed, you'll do well. Empiric antibiotic regimens for pediatric bacterial meningitis can be difficult to remember because they vary with age. However, if you just remember 3 antibiotics, you should have no problem. Allergies to these agents are uncommon, so that's a bonus. Here are the 3 antibiotics: cefotaxime, vancomycin, and ceftriaxone. It's helpful to remember them in that order: cefotaxime, vancomycin, and ceftriaxone. Cefotaxime can be given to children 4 weeks old. Cefotaxime and vancomycin are for children between 4 and 12 weeks old. Vancomycin and ceftriaxone can be given to children older than 12 weeks. So the sequence becomes cefotaxime, cefotaxime and vancomycin, vancomycin and ceftriaxone. And the dosages? You can tell the examiner you would like to look at the package inserts. They're always available. The candidate failed to order vancomycin in this case, and it was part of a critical action. The reason it was part of a critical action is because penicillin-resistant pneumococci have been reported throughout the United States. In a situation like this, the examiner is likely to try and help you out by suggesting, in an indirect manner, that the antibiotic regimen you ordered was incomplete. But don't count on it. Learn the antibiotic regimens for sepsis and meningitis. Now I'd like to say a word about the use of steroids in meningitis. This is a controversial issue. Some studies show that they improve neurologic outcome, others do not. Some even suggest they are harmful. To be on the safe side, it's probably best to adhere to the guideline issued by the American Academy of Pediatrics, and that is to limit the use of dexamethasone to the presumptive treatment of Haemophilus influenza meningitis, a rare disease in the United States today. Meningitis is an ideal topic for the oral board exam because of its potential high morbidity and mortality rate. It is also one of the top 10 missed diagnoses of our specialty. I think it's very likely that some of you will have a meningitis case in your exam. And I don't think it's going to be a young adult with headache, vomiting, and a stiff neck, because these are not the ones we miss. Meningitis in the very young and in the elderly often has subtle presentations. This is the end of the 5th case study.